Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Chasing Tales podcast. My name is Walt, his name is Chase, and we have one easy goal. Every week, we try and connect with you guys and bring the outdoors to you when you're in the office, when you're at work, when you're mowing the yard, whatever it is that's keeping you out of the woods. We're hoping to entertain you and bring the woods to you each and every week. Today's going to be a little bit of a BS session between Chase and I because we haven't really talked about us in a little bit, well, really since Chase shot his deer. The season's kind of progressing. We're kind of hitting the meat of my season. So we're just going to kind of catch up. But Chase, dude, what's going on in your world? You know, personal best buck has been killed. I mean, have we talked about that on the podcast yet?
No, we haven't.
Oh, okay. Well, the floor is yours, sir.
On the podcast. Yeah, man. I think it was December 2nd was the day that I ended up taking that buck. And the funny part was back when we were at the teaching train in Tallahassee, I had gotten some trail cam pictures of a buck in velvet that was really big. And I was showing it to some of the guys like Craig and Nick and Adam and was like, hey, check out this buck that I got on my camera in velvet. And you know how summer stuff is where you're kind of like, well, he's on the property now, but it doesn't necessarily mean that he'll be on the property come the fall.
Right.
Because they have different ranges. And I got some other pictures of him in some other areas. It was just a random – I just set this trail camera up on a road, just kind of on this road where a couple of roads kind of come together, and just happened to catch him walking. And he looked like – at this point, which I thought was kind of weird – he looked like he was already pretty much fully grown. Like he didn't have much left to do at that point. And it was still probably, I don't know, 2 months before they shed their velvet at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, I don't know if this deer is going to do much else unless he just starts throwing some weird kickers or something, you know. But I that's when I first noticed him on camera. And at the time, I didn't really recognize him because he was in velvet, and it was kind of a side profile picture, and I wasn't sure if I had any history with the deer before. And once we finally get to where he's out of velvet, I find him when he's out of velvet, and he was kind of going through this pinch point, and there was a peanut field probably, I don't know, a quarter mile away that a bunch of the deer were going to. So it was a great spot to put a camera because I was catching all kinds of deer that would come cruising through this pinch point to kind of get to that field, that peanut field. And the funny part about the story is it was the first day of our season, first day of bow season, and I was slotted to work. So I was like, you know what, I'd had pictures of them crossing through this point, but a lot of it was in the evening time, and a lot of it was probably, you know, maybe 30 minutes after dark, 30 minutes to an hour after dark of him cruising back or cruising through there. And I had never gotten any pictures of him in the morning time, like coming back from there. It was always like an evening time photo, or every now and then it'd be maybe in the middle of the night or something. But it was always him leaving. And I never gotten a morning time photo. And I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna hunt opening morning. I really didn't have a deer that I had figured that I had pinned down anywhere, public, private, any of those things. So I decided I'm just going to go to work. And I had a cell cam in that area, and the cell cam was kind of spotty. It's like hit or miss in that area. Like the signal wasn't great. So sometimes it would send you all the pics. Sometimes it may send you partial pics. Sometimes it wouldn't send you anything. And I'm sitting at work, and I get this text, and I think I had it set to send me text like around 9 o'clock in the morning or something at that point. And I get this text of him and three other bucks cruising through that pinch point at like 7:30 in the morning on opening day. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me, man. I have not seen this deer at a morning time picture at all. And then opening day, he cruises through there with three other bucks. And I'm like, what the heck, man? So I was trying to figure out, I was like, I wonder why they, I'd kind of seen him running with a couple of other bucks kind of during the summer. He would run with like this little, probably 2.5-year-old, like wider 8-point, and then like a smaller, like basket rack 7-point that they were kind of all, most of the pictures I'd kind of see them running together.
Right.
And I was trying to figure out, I was like, I wonder why all these deer were kind of funneling off that morning in particular. You know what I mean? It was just weird. It was just, and there was a ton of does. And I got all kinds of pictures that morning. I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, this would have been like an incredible first hunt of the year, opening day, just to have all of that activity come cruising through. And it was kind of an area in between like planted pines, but there were this like finger of oak trees that ran through it. And they were using that finger of oak trees to kind of travel back through to go to their bedding areas, is what I figured. And that was the last picture I got of them in the morning time for months. That was the last picture I got of them in a morning time. And actually the last daylight picture I got of him for a while. And I was like, so, but anyways, at that time I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure they're coming off this peanut field. Well, a couple of days later, I go check that peanut field. Well, they had tilled it under. And I was like, okay, well, that's a wrap. You know what I mean? Like they may come a little bit more, but they're not going to be traveling here very much more. And at that point I'm trying to figure out, okay, where do I, and then I'm just running cameras everywhere. Just trying to see if I can get him on camera. And there was also one other deer that I've been interested in the last 3 years of taking as well. But they're in different areas. So I run some cameras over there, and then I was running cameras kind of everywhere to try to find him. And he would pop up on camera just every now and then, like in maybe a random area at a random time. And I probably didn't catch another daylight picture of him until maybe middle of October, so maybe a month after that, I caught like a random daylight picture of him on the road where I originally got a picture of him, like at 5 o'clock in the afternoon with a couple of does. So I figured, I was like, well, he's with those does. And I knew that they would be looking for does pretty much from the get-go. And I figured, well, he's just going to be spotty because he's going to be out trying to breed does. And I had noticed that his neck had swollen up and all that good stuff, where he was like, yeah, it's just going to be, at this point, it's not necessarily going to be, I'm going to have him patterned. It would be more of getting some of these areas and probably get lucky if he's cruising through trying to chase a doe or something along those lines. So I continue to run cameras, not having a lot of luck on him. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, I've got to go to Iowa. So I do the Iowa trip, get back, and I don't think I caught a single picture of him while I was gone to Iowa, But I believe my father-in-law, who was running some cameras in there too, had like a picture or two of them, but it was always in like the middle of the night, like it could, maybe 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, where he'd have pictures of this deer. So I decided, I was like, you know what? I was like, he spent a lot of time in that kind of that pinch point area. I knew it was dropping, had been dropping. There had been acorns dropping in that area. So I decided to put my cell camera back over in that area and run it. And then lo and behold, I catch like kind of like a nighttime picture of them over in that area, like a couple of days in a row. So I'm like, okay, well, I've got a couple of days in a row pictures, but they weren't daylight pictures at that point. And one evening I was trying to get out there and hunt, and my wife had something she had to do at work, so I couldn't get out to there. And then I get a picture of him like at 4:30 in the afternoon on the cell camera that evening. And I was like, oh man, you gotta be kidding me. It's like, I hadn't seen a daylight picture of him since October 15th. And this was probably, I don't know, November 20th or something like that or whatever. So maybe 2 daylight pictures of this deer in 2 months is how many I had gotten in 2 months. And the rest were all like nighttime pics. So I'm like, okay, well, I was like, he's in this area. I guess I'm just going to have to figure I'm going to just work this area from here on out until I can get him, as long as the wind's right. As long as I got a good wind, I'll come in this area. And in that area, I probably only spent like over the season maybe 5 sits in that area, like total. Because of the wind and just not getting consistent pictures of him. Not to say he wasn't in that area. I was just kind of going off some cell cam data. And he showed up then, and then there was maybe a few days later, he showed up on the camera in the morning time, and I think I was at work again, and it was like 8:30 in the morning he was on that camera. And I was like, all right, this is kind of like, okay, he's back in this area. He's working this area for some reason. And I always thought that was pretty much his area, because there was a big bedding area right there. And my figure was, I was like, I'm pretty sure he beds over in this big bedding area right here. And I'm just going to have to, this is where I'm probably going to end up killing him, is going to be in this area. And but at that point, I'd only hunted that spot 2 times. Like, I'd hunted that spot 2 times during the entire season. So I'm like, okay, I'm just from here on out, we're supposed to get some cold fronts coming through. I'm just going to set up in this area. And I hunted it an evening time and saw a few deer. And then I hunted it a morning time when it was cold, and I saw a ton of deer. Like, there was a morning that I went and sat up in there and just saw a ton of deer. Saw quite a few small bucks and does, and they were all cruising through and nothing. And the way the wind was, it was perfect, and nothing ever winded me or got spooked or anything like that. I mean, I had deer all around me. Heck, I even had, I think I sent you a picture of a button buck that bedded underneath me for like 20 minutes. Chewing on some acorns and whatever other browse that he was feeding on in that area. And I noticed, I was like, man, they're definitely using this area, and they're hitting these acorns. And the acorn, it was weird because those acorns had been dropping for probably like 2 months. But I had noticed that they weren't ever really eating on them when they'd cruise through there. And then all of a sudden I noticed, I'm like, hey, I was like, these deer are starting to kind of eat these acorns that have been here for a month and a half. It's funny, I listened to a podcast the other day from the MSU Deer Lab, mm-hmm. and it was about acorns.
Really?
And it was about acorns, and the study, the guy did a study on, I think his name's Uriah. I think he actually has a podcast. He's like a co-host on another podcast, and I can't remember what the name of their podcast is. But they did a study on acorns.
Oh, Mariah, Hunt the Land podcast.
Yeah. And he had done a study on acorns, and one of the things that he had found was, is he he actually went and acquired a ton of acorns.
Yep.
And he put them underneath these trees. And he found that it wasn't until after like 2 months after he had put the acorns down that the deer started hammering them.
Really?
And it was kind of like a post-rut type thing. Like it was after, it was kind of a little bit during the rut and then post-rut when they started hammering the acorns on those trees. So I was like, well, I was like, that kind of makes sense to maybe why they were hammering the acorns in that area a month and a half or so after they had dropped. And these were actually, these were water oaks, acorns that, and then maybe a laurel too, kind of mixed in that were dropping in that area. And so they were eating on it. And I was like, well, I didn't see him. And then I hadn't got a picture of him in a few days. And I had my, this is the same thing with my cell cam. All of a sudden, for like a week, my cell cam just starts sending me one picture every transmission. Like it would just send me one pic, and it may be of the deer like walking up far away or up close or just something. Like it wasn't sending me like normal pics like it had been sending me. And I was like, well, it's messed up. So I was like, I don't even have any intel really for like a week's time. So it was the morning of the second. I decided, okay, I'm going in there. The wind was, at this point, the wind would be absolutely perfect for this spot for how I figured the deer was using that area. And it was 27 degrees that morning. So I'm like, well, if anything, this is the coldest day of the season so far.
Right.
And I get there that morning, get set up. And I probably got there. I didn't get there super early to set up. I probably got there maybe 10, 15 minutes before a legal shooting light. Got set up because it's kind of an area where I kind of got to walk through some stuff and I'm trying to be quiet, like super quiet getting in. And I would just rather be able to see just a little bit walking around as opposed to making a bunch of noise to get to this area. Because, I mean, it butts up right to bedding. I mean, it's in between bedding, basically. And I get in, and it wasn't too long after I had been set up, I see this young, like, basket rack seven-point come through, and he's feeding on some acorns in front of me. And I'm just watching him. I was like, I'm going to watch him and kind of see what he does. And he was eating some a little bit of browse, grabbing some acorns. And all of a sudden, I hear a noise kind of behind me to the left. And I, like, kind of slowly turn back behind me to the left. And there he stands at 20 yards. God. The buck I've been after all season is standing behind me at 20 yards. And I'm like, yeah, I was like, oh my goodness. And he's looking at the other buck. Like right. he's kind of looking towards the other buck. And I'm like, well, and I didn't want to move too much because it was one of those cold, like kind of crisp mornings where there's basically not a lot of wind.
Mm-hmm.
And every little noise is like amplified. And I'm like, okay, well, he's kind of looking my direction a little bit. He's looking towards that buck, but he had no clue I was in the world. So I'm like, well, let's see how this plays out. So all of a sudden he kind of starts moving towards me a little bit. And I was like, this deer is fixing to walk. And I didn't really have a shot. And I was like, this deer is fixing to walk directly underneath me. And I'm hunting with a rifle at this point. Like I brought my rifle because everywhere I had gotten pictures, it was in that pinch point, like 60, 70 yards away. And I figured that's what was going to be my shot, like him cruising through that pinch point area. And I was going to get a shot at him at like 60, 70 yards probably. And that was pretty much the closest tree I could get in towards that pinch point. And he's walking towards me. He kind of stops and then he puts his head down and he kind of rubs his antlers in some dog fennel. Like there was like this little dog fennel bush right there. And he starts kind of like rubbing his antlers in the dog fennel. At that point, I get turned, get the gun up, get ready. Well, he turns and acts like he's fixing to go back in the woods. And I was like, oh no, you're not fixing to pull the slip on me at 12 yards. Like 10 to 12 yards is where he's at this point. He's like at 10 to 12 yards at this point. And he turns and he stops. He just turned and he kind of stopped. And his head and neck and kind of shoulder were all behind a tree. But he had a little bit of his vitals exposed, kind of near where his last ribs and stuff would be. And I get set up, get the crosshairs on him. And I'm like, well, he's kind of quartered away anyway. So I was like, if I stick it back a little bit, I'm like, it's still going to quarter and it may go out right behind his shoulder on the other side. So he turns, he sits there for a few seconds. I get on him, pull the trigger, and he kind of spins, turns. He runs directly underneath me and away from me. And I'm trying to listen. I'm like, okay, I'm listening. And he made it into some short pines with some dog fennel or some of that, you know, that broom sage. And I thought I heard a crash. And I was like, oh my goodness. I was like, I've just shot this this big buck that I've been after the whole season. And I had recognized this deer from a year before. He was a 9-point this year, but I recognized him from last year where he was an 8-point. But he had the exact same frame. And kind of his left side kind of curled in a little bit more and looked identical, other than he had like a 9th point that was maybe 2 inches long or something on that side. And last year I'd made the decision that I wasn't going to shoot him because last year he was about 100 inches mm-hmm. or so.
Yep.
And he had broken one of his tines, one of his G2s last year, fighting. So I made the decision not to shoot him. And I sit there for a while, and I'm like, and actually when I shot him, there was a spike that I didn't even see that runs, and he runs directly underneath where I'm sitting at. And I was like, I don't even know where this deer was, but I was locked in on the big deer at that point. So he could have just kind of moved in from anywhere at that point. So he kind of sticks around for a little bit. And then I had a ton of more like does and kind of small bucks kind of funnel through that area. So I'm like, well, I'm just going to sit. It was 7:30 in the morning. I mean, it wasn't long after daylight when I shot him. And I'm kind of going through my head. I was like, all right. I was like, I know I had to hit him. I was like, he was at 10 yards. Because, you know, stuff starts running through your head after you shoot and the deer runs off. It's like a million things could – it's like, okay, I know I hit him good. I was like, I still want to kind of give him some time anyways just in case. I hit him a little bit further back than I thought I did. I'm pretty sure I heard him crash. And I'd been sitting there for maybe an hour, hour and a half. And I had actually, I think I had like poloed you and I texted a couple of other people and I was like, hey, I just had the buck at 10 yards and I couldn't get a shot. Like I was pretty much playing it up with everybody. I'm like,
you were,
I'm like, hey man, I was like,
which is
like,
so typical for you.
Well, yeah. And the fact that that's how my season had been going already this year.
Right.
Like everything that could go wrong had gone wrong. Like deer on the other side of a fence at 10 to 12 yards, bow being messed up, muzzle loader not going off, just all kinds of things that have happened this season. And I was like, well, this will sound believable. They're all going to believe me that this happened for the most part because that's just the way the year's been going.
I didn't even think – when you sent me that message, I was like, wow, he just can't catch a break. Like, this is unreal.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. So I get my binoculars, and I'm kind of – I was like, let me kind of glass the area where I shot him at. And then I saw, like, there was this bright red spot on some just like a weed or something that was over there. I was like, oh, yeah. I was like, I definitely got him. So like, at that point, I'm like, all right, it's time to get down. I can't wait any longer to see. So get down, go check the spot, and sure enough, it looked like some lung material and blood on that on the leaves right there. And I have a blood, actually had a good blood trail. And then that's the point where I call you. I'm like, hey man, I was just kidding. I actually shot the deer
yeah.
at 12 yards, pretty much point blank range with the rifle. And at that point you're kind of like, oh man,
you
I could have shot
me
this
actually.
Deer. Yeah. I was like, man, I could have shot this deer with a bow, but then it's just like, well, sometimes you don't bring a knife to a gunfight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just one of those deals where I'm like, ah, I could have brought the bow. But I honestly, how I had played it in my head, that was not – that scenario never entered my mind that I'd be able to shoot him at 10 yards.
Like, right.
It was just didn't play into my – play into the I didn't factor it in. And so I get on the phone with you, and then I'm like, hey, I'm going – I start talking to you.
Oh,
and
that's right, because you called me first, and you did the blood trail. That's what it was.
Right. Yeah. I called you. I start blood trailing the deer, and then he probably went 40 yards. I mean, where he ran away from me, and he went into that stuff, I couldn't see him anymore. But I never saw him run like left or right or anything like that, because he ran kind of straight away from me, and there were some trees kind of in the way, and then I'd heard the crash, or a crash, what I thought was a crash in that area. So pretty much follow the blood trail right to him, and then the celebrating kind of starts, and then I was like, hey, I was like, well, shoot, we can FaceTime. So then I'm like, let me see if I can FaceTime you from here. And then I FaceTime you, and that was it, man. That was the culmination of this season. And I was like, finally something paid off where everything else had gone wrong. And it's kind of like one of those deals where you got to keep telling yourself and keep making yourself go. Even if stuff's gone wrong, you've had things happen, it can change in an instant like that. Literally, I hear something behind me. Look, there he is, 20 yards. 30 seconds later, I'm shooting him at 10 yards. And I have this deer on the ground. And then so I've got to call everybody, and I'm sending people some text, kind of like some half text of that. And then, of course, I had a couple of buddies like, I can't believe you lied to me.
I think that was Nick, wasn't it?
That was my buddy Brandon Ogden, the one I hunt some public with or whatever. Yeah. He's like, you lie. And they all believed it. It's like, I'm telling you, everybody believed that story just because of how the season had gone. They're like, no way, man. Your season, man. This is just 2020 has not been good to you.
Well, and y'all, listen, Chase, we call him, you know, I didn't come up with this nickname. This is one that someone else gave him, but it is, you know, totally suitable for him, and that is Iceman. Everybody calls him Iceman because he's calm all the time. I think I've seen him like slightly aggravated one time, and that was you when we had some people try and, you know, fool with us while we're trying to get out to a hunt. When he shoots a big deer, he loses his mind. I have never heard someone go from so chill all the time to fired the hell up. I mean, he is just cloud nine, man.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, you just got to think of. I was like, and this is a big deer. I mean, this is a big deer for Florida, anyways. And everything that had kind of gone on this season, I'm like, finally, you got all these like emotions, and they finally kind of come out to where you're just super pumped and thankful that everything finally came together. And I just kind of have always had that never give up spirit anyways. I remember at one point watching, I think it was Mike Iaconelli that used to fish like the Bassmasters and all that stuff. And he was fishing a tournament and he was having some rough time, but then all of a sudden he starts catching these big fish like right at the end of the tournament. And then he just starts screaming, never give up. And I had always kind of used that as my mantra. I always think of him when I'm like, okay, it's time to – maybe I should just give up. I always think about that moment that I watched of him just screaming, never give up. And I kind of use that as motivation. But, yeah, he was a big deer. I got him out. It's funny. I texted my wife the picture. And she doesn't really get fired up about me killing a deer. She's always like, oh, poor thing. And then, like, her response back was, wow, finally.
You didn't tell me that.
So it was funny. She's like, wow, oh, wow, finally.
And it sounds like something Aunt Elena would say.
Yeah, and then finally, I think I sent her a picture. She's like, oh, poor thing, or something like that. And that was the second one. But my father-in-law had kind of been chasing this deer. He knew about him, and he had kind of been hunting an area where he thought he was. So I decided, and he was at work, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to load this deer up, and I'm just going to take him to him and show him. And as I was leaving, he's texting me or he texted me, because he always texts me a picture, like well or picture, like of something, like thinking I've killed something, basically. He's like, well, have you killed anything, or you got a picture or whatever? So I just send him a text back. I'm like, are you at the office? And he texts me, yes. And then like a second later, he's like, did you get him? And I was like, I didn't say anything back. Well, then all of a sudden he's calling me. He's calling my cell phone. Or I think I texted him back, I'll be there in 20 minutes, is all, yeah. I texted him. I was like, I'll be there in 20 minutes. So then, of course, he's like calling me. So I have to, I'm like, yeah, I got him. And I was like, I'm bringing him to you so you can see him in the flesh. And,
yeah.
That way I just don't send you a picture of the deer. So I took it to his office and showed him and took some pictures. And one of the cool things of it all is I'd got it back to the house. And I was like, you know, I was like, I haven't really taken any good pictures with this deer. And it was during the middle of the week, and I'm trying to, I was like, well, who do I have that can take some pictures of me with a deer? And I'm thinking of some buddies. Like, I call a couple of buddies, and one of them, he had taken overtime, and the other one was over an hour away, and he was out in the woods. And
mm-hmm.
So finally, I'm like, Don was like, oh, you know what? I was like, I can call my dad. I was like, because my dad's retired now. I was like, duh. I was like, let me call my dad and see what he's doing. And I called my dad's not a hunter.
Right.
He calls me the great white hunter. That's what he calls me all the time. He's like, oh, the great white hunter got another one. And, but I mean, he understands my passion for it, but he's just never had a passion for hunting. I mean, I didn't grow up hunting, and most of the people know that on the podcast. I didn't get into it until I was an adult pretty much.
Right.
And so I text him, I'm like, hey, can you come take some pictures of me, of this deer? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'd love to come take some pictures. So he came out, took some pictures, and then we went and I caped the deer out, and he hung out for a while and watched that process, because he had never been a part of that process, like, or anything. So I think he had a great time. I had a great time being able to kind of share some of that experience with my dad. So I thought that was extra special.
Yeah, of course.
For this deer was to be able to get to share that with. And I want to get him out. He had kind of mentioned a little bit last year some about going turkey hunting or just tagging along for a turkey hunt or something like that. So that'll be my plans for this year, is to get him out and to experience a turkey hunt.
Because sure.
Him and I have never hunted together or anything like that. So I think that would be cool, is to take him out and – maybe get him on a bird. I think that would be awesome, is to get him on a bird this upcoming spring turkey season.
Yeah, dude.
I did. I scored the deer just because I was like, I'm interested, because I had been showing people pictures of the deer, and we were kind of guessing. It's like, oh, what do you think the deer scores? And we had all kind of said somewhere between like 120 and 125 inches is kind of what our guess was. But he had a big body. I mean, he was a big body deer as well. He wasn't one of those. So it was kind of like, I think he might go 125. And somebody's, yeah, he's probably between 120 and 125. And I had been texting back and forth with quite a few people about this deer. I'm like, and we were just kind of bouncing ideas off of people, bouncing ideas off of you and then some of my other buddies that hunt. And at some point we were just like, oh man, well, you've got to get this deer. You've got to get this deer, is pretty much is what we kind of boiled down to.
Yeah.
Because he really didn't have a pattern. I mean, other than, hey, you just need to be in the woods.
Yeah.
And so I scored him, and I rough scored him at 132 6/8 is what he ended up scoring. So, and that would be my personal best.
Across the board,
personal best in Florida. I've been to Texas. I've been to Illinois once, and Kansas. I killed a buck in Kansas, but it wasn't a 130 something. And then obviously I didn't kill anything in Iowa this season. But yeah, so my personal best is I got it this season in Florida. And I would have thought I would have done that in Iowa. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I just knew of Iowa I was going to shoot my personal best this year. And ended up shooting my personal best in Florida.
Golly.
This season. And so he's a great buck. And I actually, when I got all done with that, a listener of the show and a fellow that's participated in the Yakking for Bass Challenge, Mr. Andy Thompson, he does taxidermy. And he's not super far from me. He's about a little over 2 hours. He actually lives in Georgia, near Thomasville. And I had actually told him, because I was talking to him earlier in the season, because I have that deer that I killed last year, and I still haven't got it back from the taxidermist yet. And I was kind of texting him because I knew he was a taxidermist. I was like, hey, man. What's the normal turnaround time on mounts and stuff? And he kind of gave me like a wide range. He goes, well, it depends on the taxidermist. Some get them out quick, and usually 3 to 4 months. And then some, it just depends on how popular they are and
sure.
how fast they get to it. It could take up to a year. And I had told him, I'm after this big deer. And if I end up getting it, I'm going to bring him to you. And I think he thought I was kidding. Like he was probably like, oh yeah, sure. Sure. You're going to bring me this deer. You're in Florida. And it might've been like 4 or 5 days after that I ended up shooting him. And then I messaged, I was like, hey, and I sent him a picture and he's like, oh yeah, congrats. And I was like, I need to get him up to you. And he was kind of like, are you being serious? And I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to bring him up to you. And so I actually took the deer a couple of days ago up there, met him, great guy.
Oh,
super
he?
Nice guy, man. You've met him a few times, I think,
yep.
through hunting in Georgia some, and we've always kind of messaged back and forth with him on bass fishing and some other things. So, it was good to finally, get to, put a face with somebody I had just been messaging with back and forth, all the time and meet somebody that's a listener of the podcast and has participated in some of the stuff that we've done.
Oh man, dude, he is legitimately one of the nicest guys. You run across people in the podcast who invest in you, right, as a person. And as a bass fisherman, as a Georgia hunter, he's one of those guys that has constantly, as I've earned, and I just say this, he hasn't given me anything, but as I've put forth the effort, as I've worked hard, and he's seen that effort, he's, you know, kind of slowly fed me little bits of information to help me along the way. And gosh, you couldn't ask for a nicer dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Super nice guy.
Yep.
He actually
climbed down early in the season. He actually climbed down early with his dad and came over and helped me track that spike I shot the opening weekend.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that.
Yep.
I remember that. I remember you telling me that. So, yep. Yep. Great guy. So, one of those kind of down-to-earth fellows that is just willing to share stuff with you. And,
yeah.
And then when you actually get to meet him, it's the same person.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So, and he's actually kind of familiar with the area that I live in, too, because he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to be coming from here, because we had kind of talked before. And he's like, oh, yeah, I used to, back in the day, kind of be in that area some. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. That we kind of shared that. So he's just a nice guy.
He is. He really is. I mean, we're lucky to be able to call him a friend. That's for sure. You know, it's, I'm excited he's doing your taxidermy work. Cause I think you're going to be thrilled with it. I know he actually helped me with my, among some other people, but he, helped me with my Euro mount this year.
Okay.
He helped me navigate the boiling process, and when I had some issues, he helped me work through it. I mean, just a cool dude, man, for sure.
Yeah, him and I, I was like, hey, whenever I come get the deer, we're going to go fishing. So we got plans to go fishing whenever I come up to get the deer. So that's going to be fun, too.
Yeah.
Get to kayak bass fishing with him.
Oh, he's going to school the hell out of us.
Well, that's the plan. I hope to learn as much as I can from them. So when it gets to yakking for bass time, I'm ready to rock and roll. He's a tough competitor, man. He's well over that. I mean, he was over 100 inches last time, and that was actually a bad month for him.
I know. I know. Mean, he said that, and it was hard to believe.
That was a bad month. And then you go look at his Georgia kayak bass fishing stuff, and you're like, dang, this – I mean, he's 115, 120-inch months and stuff like that. So he's hard at it, and he knows what he's doing, especially that time of year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's he's a good dude. You know, he's helped me this past weekend as we record this. I'm still licking my wounds from this past weekend because he and a couple other people kind of turned me on to some of these places up there in Southwest Georgia. And I went on my first solo camping hunting trip. I really don't know what to classify it. I mean, I slept in the back of the Xterra and I hunted for a weekend. It was amazing. And again, it was one of these things where it's like a gentle nudge in the right direction. Like, hey, maybe you should check this place out. Right. And I had to do the legwork, and, I put in, I got drawn, and it was a phenomenal hunt. Dude, you and I have talked about it. I cannot wait for one day for you and I to be able to go up there and hunt this place together, because that place is gorgeous. I mean, just everything you want public land to be. If you want to get away from people, you can get away from people. If you want to work hard and get after big deer, the opportunity is there. And it's kind of, dude, the more I hunt Georgia, the less, you and I were talking about this just yesterday, the more I hunt Georgia, the less time I spend here during the Georgia season, just because the opportunity there is so much greater. I mean, I've hunted my quota hunt here in Florida, and I think early season I tried to go down to the coast and hunt a couple times. That's it, man. I mean, I'm not saying I've given up on the area, but it's one of those things. There's so much opportunity just across that border.
Yeah, yeah, you and I talked about that, and I'm probably going to get my Georgia license next year. I've never hunted Georgia. I've hunted Alabama before, but
yeah,
never hunted Georgia. And I mean, it's not super far away from me. I mean, I'm an hour and 5-10 minutes from the Georgia line, probably where I'm at. So, and from some of the details that you gave me from this weekend, I mean, from that quota hunt, I mean, it sounded phenomenal.
Oh my God. I mean, it's so conflicting, because the weekend went not as expected, but I'm still amped about the weekend, which is kind of always weird, right? Whenever you have like conflicting feelings like that. But get up there, Friday I drive up and wake up the next morning, and it was just like a comedy of errors. It was ridiculous. I wake up and the front windshield's frozen on the truck. The heater's out. For some reason, the heater wouldn't work that morning. I've still not been able to figure out what it is, because it worked the rest of the weekend. But Saturday morning, when it was 27 degrees, the windshield couldn't be thawed. So I had to drive down the road from camp with the window down and my head out the window, which was bitterly cold. I mean, that's not what you want to do. And I get there, I'm putting my my sticks on the back of the pack, and I've somehow managed to cut one of the straps, it looks like, and so the strap pops. I'm like, oh my God. So now I'm carrying my sticks in my stand in one hand, and my pack in my 7-pound rifle in my right hand. I had to walk 2.5 miles to get back there. It's like 2.39 miles to get back there, get to the base of the tree. And I really needed to get really high just because of the thermals in this area. And I left my friggin' Aider in the truck. So I just deal with it. I suck it up. I climb up the tree. And as I'm climbing up the tree, the road that I walk down, that is a non-navigable road for vehicles, here comes a friggin' quad, you know, like bad boy buggy, but it was gasoline, down the road, and he's just dropping people off down the road. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Like, this is just ridiculous. And 10 minutes before shooting light, here comes this bloke across this open like pine flat area with a Q-beam in each hand, pointed in opposite directions like he was in a Western shootout, right? Like some kind of like drawdown. And he's scanning both sides of the freaking pine flat as he walks to his stand, and I'm like shining him off because he's coming right to me, and I'm shining him off. Dude gets 100 yards from me and says, "I hope you have a good morning," and puts his climber up on the tree and climbs up facing right at me. And I'm just like, what is this, right? Like, this is absurd. And the worst part is his wind, where I was trying to get up and get my thermals out of there, because of where he set up, the wind was blowing right down into the bottom, right where I expected the deer to come from. It was maddening. And the whole time I'm like, you know what? This is public land hunting. It's frustrating, but, you know, whatever. You're just going to keep a positive attitude. And Bo Lease, who's a guest on the podcast, he lives up in that area. He goes, dude, you're probably going to shoot a Pope and Young now. This is ridiculous. He's like, if you shoot a Pope and Young, I'm going to be so pissed. And it was just kind of one of those mornings where everything went wrong so badly, something had to go right. Unfortunately, right. Nothing went right about this morning. But I'm sitting there, and I'm kind of starting to feel a little sorry for myself, just like the faintest bit. And off to the left, I hear a twig snapping. I'm like, oh, man. And there's a scrape line over there that I had found a month prior. And I look over and hear legs coming through the woods. I'm like, oh, here we go. This is going to be my one shot. Swing the camera arm around, zoom in. This buck comes in, and I knew it was a buck because I could just tell by the size of the body of the deer. Here he comes in, and he starts working the scrape right there 50 yards from me. Beautiful. It had just rained the night before, and everybody I'd talked to said, dude, these bucks are going to be up on their feet. They're going to be marking scrapes. They're going to be checking their areas. It went from like a high of 60 the day before down to 27. It was going to be like a high of 40 that day. And he sat there dead downwind of me, which is important context to the story, dead downwind of where I had been taking milkweed and tossing out of the tree. You could watch it float. I swear to you, he was standing on top of milkweed. And so I'm kind of in a bit of a hurry at this point to get a shot off on this deer. He's quartering to me. He's working this scrape. And in my mind, I'm thinking it's only a matter of time before this deer catches my wind and he's gone, or the wind of that other dude for that matter. I mean, he was coming right down the draw. So I'm trying to anchor on the tree, and for some reason, and I've talked to Adam Cruz, and I think he's talked me through this, the tree leaned back just a little bit, and like in the way that I was hanging, I was on the negative side of that tree. And so trying to get anchored on the tree was difficult because my bolt kept hitting the bridge of my saddle because I couldn't get close enough to the tree. And so he comes in. I was kind of set up facing a different direction than he came. He came in, and I'm sitting there desperately trying to get anchored on the tree, and I'm running out of time. So I just freehanded it. First shot felt great, like felt awesome. Missed. Must have shot underneath him. And I'm sitting here like, oh, my God, he's just standing there. So I rack another round as quick as I can, put the crosshairs on him, and pull the trigger. He buckles real hard, limping on his right leg, and he just methodically walks into the swamp. And I was desperately trying to get a clear shot to anchor him. And everybody afterwards is like, well, why didn't you shoot him in like the hips and at least drop him, because you knew it, because my gut told me it wasn't a good shot. Turned out it wasn't a good shot. He was quartering two with like a little bit of favor to the right. So I was trying to put it on the front right shoulder and hopes it would go, and not in hopes, if I put it on the front right shoulder, it would have gone through the lungs, probably would have caught the heart. But I pulled that shot forward a little bit. So I entered kind of in front of that front right shoulder and out through the back, out through the front left, shoulder. Clearly broke the leg. And I had a buddy of mine ask me, like, why didn't you, did you not have a shot at his rear? And I was like, yeah, because you should have like, you know, shot him, busted the hip, dropped him in place, and then finished him. And in theory, that would work out because you would have more rounds. But in like the second to last final insult of this entire thing, I only took three rounds into the woods, and I'm sitting there at the truck that day. I'm like, there's no way you're going to need more than three bullets. Like, there's no way. You just don't need them. Take the three that fit in your magazine. Just leave the rest in the truck. Your pack already weighs enough. I can tell you right now, I will never enter the woods without like six solid rounds at a minimum. It will never happen again, because I could have done that in theory. You know, like in theory, I could have anchored that deer and then finished him off, and it would have been not ideal, but I didn't have that luxury because in my mind, I only had one bullet and I had to make it count.
Right.
So I got down out of the tree as quick as I could because I thought I saw the deer bed down, climb down out of the tree, creep into the swamp, and I'm following the blood trail, and it was this beautiful mix of, I still am convinced I got one lung, frankly, because there was this bright red, frothy blood. Had bubbles in it, and then you had that obvious muscle hit, right? That real watery blood. And I followed it into the woods, and I was hoping that I would, you know, catch him bedded up and I could slip a final round in. And right about the time that I got to the thick stuff, and I think there's a lesson to be learned here, right about the time I got to the thick stuff, he had bedded down, and I bumped that deer. And I backed out. I called a lot of people. You and almost everybody else was like, get in there and go find that deer. I heard what sounded like a thrash. It didn't sound like the deer bounded off. It just sounded like something just fell, like a death jump or something. So based on the best knowledge we had at that time, I went in there and tried to, you know, go find the deer or put the final shot on him. And, went to where I heard the thrash, didn't find the deer, backed out, called a couple buddies, and we went in there at noon. So I shot the deer about 7:30, 7:45, went in there at noon, and one of the dudes that was there was like, dude, this is 100% a dead deer. We found about a 2.5-3 ounce chunk of, like, you know, meat. I mean, this deer was hurt. And so just as we get maybe 30 yards beyond where I had stopped in the thick stuff ahead of us, you could see in the brush moving, you could see something struggling to get on the other side. And unfortunately, that was the last we encountered that deer. I backed out, called a dog, gave it another friggin' 6 hours. The dog got there. And the upshot is, guys, we lost the blood trail in the swamp. The water picked up, and his dogs worked great. I don't think he did anything wrong with his dogs. I don't think the dogs did anything wrong. I think whenever you have water like that and an abundance of it, I think it's probably hard for those dogs to track. And it was about 10:45 or so. It was probably close to 9:45. We finally just called it. He looked at me and said, dude, the dogs are right here. They won't go anywhere else. The deer should have been right here. I don't know what to tell you. And they worked that area, dude, like crisscrossed it back and forth. And when he would take them off that area, they'd go right back to that area.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know that there's much different I could have done. I would have taken the same shot regardless. You know, that frontal shot's a 7mm Remington Magnum at 50 yards. You know, put it where it belongs. It's a dead deer. There was nothing wrong with that shot. I think hindsight being 20/20, I should have waited and just called the dog initially, because I feel like we could have caught up to that deer before we pushed it out of the thick stuff into the other opening on the other side. But I mean, hindsight's always 20/20.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, the advice I was giving you, which sounds like some other people were, was like, just go get the deer. I mean, you saw him bed down. He's obviously hurt pretty bad if he bedded down that as quick as you said he did, and to try to finish him off. But the way you kind of describe it, it was thick in those areas. So with a rifle and scope and everything else, it's going to be hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I still, in my gut, I think that deer is dead. Like, I really do. And, Bo's going to go back and try and find some buzzards, so maybe I can get some closure to this. A lot of lessons were learned. But you know, it is what it is. This kind of thing happens. I get back to the tree stand and I'm packing up all my stuff, 'cause I've got a while. You know, I backed off at, let's say, 8:15. Bo didn't get there till 12. And, so I packed up all my things. I'm looking at the SD card. I'm listening, trying to look at the footage to see where I hit him. The SD card is corrupted. And in the weirdest twist of events, evidently my camera, my DSLR, you can jostle the battery just enough to where the camera briefly loses power, and it takes the MP4 files and corrupts them into Microsoft Access add-on files, which is a database. It's basically like Excel, but it's more for, like, you know, managing inputs and outputs kind of thing. And unfortunately, the very first shot evidently jostled the camera. And I only know that this is the issue because as I'm Googling solutions on how to try and salvage some of these files, people are like, oh, well, yeah, I bumped my camera while I was recording, or I have the extended battery pack and I was trying to do a hot swap on it and it cuts the battery, or I can move the extended battery pack a little bit and it kills the power, and then this is the issue. So kind of, you know, putting two and two together as like the final insult to this entire situation, I wasn't able to even capture anything on footage. Everything for the rest of the hunt is gone. And so I'm in search of a new camera. I've got a loaner coming my way, but it was a very frustrating weekend. But the big points here are I had fun. The camping in the back of the truck was very, like, it worked really well. And, I've discovered a great WMA with some real quality deer. Chase, what do you think that, I mean, the footage is stupid grainy, but what do you think that deer, I think it probably would have been my biggest deer I'd shot, but you seem to think maybe the one I shot here was bigger.
Yeah, it'd be close.
Okay.
The way your camera kind of zooms in,
Your DSLR is obviously not as good a zoom as like my
right
camcorder that can zoom in a lot. Is a lot more powerful.
Yep.
Than that. So even at 40 yards, it still looked like it was a good distance away. You know what I mean? Like it yeah. wasn't quite. And you had the whole body shot of the deer, and he was kind of. I mean, it that footage was actually pretty good. I mean, the deer comes in, you can tell yeah. he's working, licking branches and things like that, and he kind of he turns his head. It looked like he had maybe a broken tine.
Yeah, I think so.
On one of his left side, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be close to what one of your biggest Florida deer is. But other than that, it was just all you basically had was like a frontal shot yeah. of the deer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it wasn't a giant or anything, but it was a quality buck.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't Popin' Young, but he was – he had good mass to him, you know. He was
yeah, he was
probably a
2.5
year old, right?
So definitely, I mean, something you're going to shoot. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, something you'd shoot, and then you wouldn't feel bad about shooting,
sure.
Especially on a quota hunt or something right. like that. So, it was just unfortunate how everything kind of played out.
Oh my God!
There, it was just it was almost like that hunt was my whole season so far. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, man. So,
and you're going to encounter stuff like that. If you hunt yeah. enough, things like that are going to happen.
Right.
I mean, heck, all the stuff that's happened to me this year, I mean, I'd never had an issue with my bow before, like my rest or anything like that on a hunt. Never not had my muzzleloader go off. And so, and that all of the stuff I had never had happened all happened in the same season. So, and pretty close together, which is frustrating.
Yeah.
But you love to hunt and
yeah.
you keep going, you push on. And that deer is if he is dead, maybe Bo will find some buzzards or find the deer. And then if not, I don't, maybe he makes it and maybe he
yeah.
doesn't. I don't know. So your buck from earlier in this season, you saw him on trail camera 2 weeks later.
The spike that I shot. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That you were yeah. sure that was a kill shot. So.
Yep.
Deer tough. They're tough animals for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. And adrenaline messes everything up, right? Like
yes.
You know, adrenaline is the biggest thing. You know, when I talked to Bo, I said, you know, this is what happened. He says, it sounds like you shot low. And the moment he said that, there was a fraction of that story that was more clear, and he's right. The crosshairs were definitely hovering a bit low. So, you know, for a little while there, I wondered, wow, is my gun off? And then as I'm talking it through with him, you know, the picture starts to get a little clearer and things start to shore up. And sure enough, I think I was probably hovering a bit on the low side, and that probably contributed to it all. So,
yeah, I know when I shoot, I've tried to shoot freehand and mm-hmm. I shoot low for
right.
some reason. I think it's just because a practice thing. And I know I was like,
yeah.
well, if I'm going to shoot freehand, so I've made a decision. I was like, well, until I go out and practice shooting freehand at these distances or anything like that, I'm just not going to do it. Like if I don't have the thing, because I just don't feel confident in it. Like I've done it
right.
and I've hit low. I missed a deer low this year with my gun, basically trying to shoot freehand
yep.
At a deer like 60, 70 yards
yep.
away. And I shot a Popin' Young pine tree that he was standing in front of. Like if it was low, I mean, it was just a hair low on that deer.
Right.
But I know I'm like, well, dude, you don't do this. Like you don't practice it. So why do it in the woods? Like you just give the deer won that time, or try to move. I mean, stuff happens
right.
fast in the woods. Like
yeah.
on that instance at a deer. I mean, I had just set up, like I had moved from another spot. I'd went to another area. It was flooded. Decided, hey, I'm going to move from this area. Went and set up in this other area. And I mean, I'm literally in the tree for maybe 10 seconds. Like, had just kind of like hung the rifle up on the hanger. And I see this doe come running out of the swamp. And a buck's behind her. And I literally had time to grab my gun, turn, and grunt at the deer to get him to stop. Like, within
mm-hmm.
5 seconds. Trying to take a quick shot like that. And I just know that's one of my weak suits and something I need to work on
sure.
In the off season. It's like, hey, go take some of these shots and see what the deal is.
That's right.
And then maybe either get comfortable doing it or just don't do it.
That's right. Yeah. And that's kind of, you know, again, a variety of lessons were learned. Probably next time I would just, instead of freehanding it out to 50, given that I don't practice enough at that, probably, you know, I mean, at the same time, you know, the buck I shot earlier this year was at 50, 55 yards, and I freehanded that one and, you know, dead center drilled it. You know, I think maybe I was a little more rattled that, you know, given all the circumstances surrounding it, you know, sometimes things just happen.
Well, yeah, on the first shot you miss, and then the deer stands there, then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, I've really get into a rush at that point.
Exactly.
Like every time I've gotten in a hurry, for the most part, is when I make my mistakes. Like,
yep.
Getting in a rush and forgetting, because you don't ever practice in a rush.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like it's not something you just go, oh yeah, I'm going to quickly do this real quick and shoot. And you miss things. Like you miss anchor points with your bow or
right.
whatever. Or you do something weird with your gun that you've never really done or something just because you're trying to get a quick shot off.
That's right.
At the deer. So I'm definitely guilty of it. And I have plenty of things that I need to work on myself. So, and not saying you need to work on it. It's just like I said, it was just could have been a rush and
sure.
adrenaline's going and weird things just happen. In the woods, like unexplainable weird things happen all the time.
Yeah I mean it's
to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was about to say, I mean that Andy said it best, if you hunt enough something's gonna go wrong, you know.
That's just
all there is to it. You hunt enough, something will go wrong at some point in time, and that you do the best you can to mitigate that, but at the end of the day it is what it is. And I did everything I could to recover that deer.
Yeah you definitely did. I mean, you went out and looked for him with buddies, then you called a dog after you had kind of talked to somebody with a dog before, and they were kind of like, it's probably not worth my time or something.
Yeah,
like
which
that. You got a hold of somebody else.
Yeah.
And they decided, I'll give it a go for you. So you definitely put in the time. And like I said, you didn't get to hunt that evening because you spent all the time looking for that deer. And then the next day, I think did you hunt that same area the next day?
I did. Yep. I put in an all day set.
Yeah, and you'd probably, so. I mean, I'm sure that area was kind of blown up from all of the activity in there from the day before, which probably kind of led to that, I would imagine. But, and you were kind of like, well, maybe that deer shows back up. I mean, he was in that area, so you're kind of hoping, well, maybe if he is alive, maybe he shows back up in that area.
Yep.
And then you finish the deal.
Yeah, that was exactly the hope, but it is what it is. Well, you and I have got a hunt coming up in mid-January. We're rapidly approaching the Christmas season, so your season's kind of winding down, but that January hunt should be a fun one. We're going to do some scouting in mid-December, and that will be the official first real, like, lengthy deer hunt we've done. We've hunted before a little bit here and there, but we've never really, like, pounded dirt and gotten after it during a peak time, so I'm pretty excited about it.
Yeah, we're planning on doing a little scouting trip to this area and checking it out. I mean, we've gotten some good intel from that area from some other people, and so our goal is to go check it out. And it's a solid WMA from the pictures I've seen of the deer on camera and deer that have been taken from it. There's some real quality Florida bucks taken from there, and it's essentially the rut time for there. So that's kind of the goal, is to get over there during the rut time when our chances are high. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be able to, fortunately you were able to schedule time off, so we're going to be able to hunt it during the week.
which is
even better. And I've always kind of been able to do that because of my work. So I think that's going to be a good time. And you've got a slew of other hunts planned between now and then, and probably after that, because your season's longer than mine.
Yep, got to mid February, end of February, something like that. So that's it. Why don't we cut this one off here? We're at an hour, and I want to get something to eat. To be honest with you, it's lunchtime.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, man. Well, guys, if you enjoyed this podcast, if you enjoy what we put out on YouTube and on the audio waves, we'd love it if you'd consider joining Patreon. Patreon is a crowdfunding source that we use to buy camera gear, to put gas in the tank, to offset the operating costs of this podcast. Obviously, that money's going towards a new camera for me, which sorely needed. But we'd love it if you join it. And if maybe contributing to Patreon isn't the thing that you're interested in, tell somebody about the podcast. Leave us a review. All of that helps equally as much. And we love all the positive feedback. We love hearing from everybody. So reach out to us and let us know how your season's going. And until next time, most importantly, get outside and enjoy the great outdoors.